Nikki, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Look, I've just got a little question. I'm actually the mother of a young girl who was at university doing a business degree, doing very well, and became involved in methamphetamine and went down a three-year addiction road with that, which was pretty difficult with a huge ripple effect on family and friends. But my husband's thoughts are with regards to the upcoming referendum about legalising marijuana is we feel that we want to legalise it because when I asked my daughter the question, where did you get introduced to this terrible drug? She said, I was at a party, I'd had a few wines, the pipe was going around and I just joined in. I would rather think that there was a joint going around and that she had joined in on that than such a lethal drug. And so this is one of the reasons I think that parents, even though we don't want to see our children doing any drugs, we want to know that, you know, our comparison to methamphetamine versus marijuana, it comes through to us that I think there's a lot less harm from marijuana. And, you know, at least that the big thing too is that now people going to parties, meth is a lot cheaper and a lot easier to get than marijuana. I would rather my kids just went out to the garden and picked off a bit of marijuana and rolled it and smoked it or took it to a party and it was free. And I think that that's, you know, we have to address the fact that marijuana is a lot more expensive and harder to get now than methamphetamine. That's the cheapest and easiest to get.
Aaron, your comments on that?
Yeah, well, Nikki, it's a terrible thing to watch a young person that we love go through drug addiction. And so certainly I have a lot of compassion for that. By the way, it hasn't been mentioned that I work as a counsellor. And so I have a particular heart for that issue. One of the things I think, though, that confuses Nikki and parents around the country is that they're thinking of a much weaker substance when they're thinking of cannabis. They're thinking, well, isn't cannabis that just very mild kind of thing? You smoke, you feel a bit funny, you feel a bit hungry, you feel a bit sleepy, and that's that. But the problem is that cannabis has changed over the years. Back in the 60s and 70s, the THC level was just 3%. In the 90s, when I was at university, I was a smoker daily for 3 years, and the THC level was around about 10%. Now the street product is around 25 to 30%, much stronger than ever before. And the worst thing is it's not just the pipe that's being passed around now. Parties, there are now edible products. Now, edible products, their THC level can be 60% and above. So they're having very similar effects to these more serious drugs that we're thinking about. So it's not the case that cannabis is the weak and harmless one and that P is the dangerous one. They are both dangerous.
A texter just says, but just before we go to a break, as a country, we have limited resources to spend on policing. P is the problem and being overlooked because the resources are being spent on chasing dope growers. People are being murdered over P deals. Our police are needed to fight this problem, not cannabis.
There's no doubt the police have got a lot to tangle with, but we can't have the black market be just after the manufacturers of P. No, we need to keep working at trying to prevent the black market from expanding, because the reality is overseas, the black market doesn't go anywhere. In Uruguay, after 3 years of legalization, the black market still accounts for 70% of the sales. In Canada, in the year following legalization, only 29% of users said they were getting all of their cannabis from legal sources. So this idea that people are afraid of conviction, well, 70% of users in Canada still bought some or all of their cannabis from the black market. We can't afford to let the black market run rampant. It's already the weakness of legalization that it doesn't make the black market go away. It just creates competition, which drives the price down. In Canada, the price of legal weed is $10 a gram. The price of black market weed is $5.90.
Steve, are you there?
Yeah, g'day.
G'day.
Hi. Look, why I think there'll be an explosion in the black market in New Zealand that may surpass any other country is our natural factory that we have here, that where it can be produced so quickly and so freely. The nature, the amount of native bush and sunshine, the same reason why we get so much milk in this country, is why you'll have the nickel and dime, as I call them, and the gangs will just simply be planting it everywhere and anywhere. And because it's legal, the police, I don't think, are going to be wasting their resources flying over in helicopters. So it'll be basically carte blanche to each and every person who wants to go about their business. And, I mean, the fact that you're thinking you're going to take away the black market, that just doesn't stack up. I mean, you've got a huge black market in the legal economy at the moment, haven't you, in amongst all sorts of areas. Why would it be any different? You've got unlimited people selling things on TradeMe who are probably not registered companies and probably not paying any tax. Nickel and dime, as I call them, and they all add up to a hell of a lot of product. And you're talking about the backyard guys are going to be just as bad as the gangs. It's going to be massive. And why would you tell Helen Clark, too, you know, for an intelligent person, she couldn't be more wrong thinking that there'll be less uptake of this. Because I call it the silent deterred. These are the people, you don't know how many people are deterred from something until you take away the law and then you find out. And I do believe it will open up. The middle class kids will be highly susceptible. You might say it's a flotsam and jetsam. The kids who haven't had a great time in life who probably are the addicts, I think it's going to move into the middle class, because the middle class kids traditionally, okay, they've gone out to a little party somewhere in the suburbs, they've tried it, but they've managed to extricate them and get themselves away from that and not take it up and for it to become habitual. In K Road, like every kid does, teenagers, at some stage after uni, they're going to be, their mates are going to go, hey, why don't we just pop in here? It's going to build up into a routine. It's going to build up into a habit. And when you go to a hospital, you can fix a broken leg by putting a cast on it. I want to ask you this. Can you put a cast on a broken brain?
And that's something that does concern people, because you don't know until you try it whether you're going to react badly to the drug. Do you, Aaron?
Well, that is the problem. And we know that young people are that much more susceptible. And the problem for young people, of course, is their brain is still developing. It won't finish developing until age 25, which is why it's interesting that this age limit of 20 has been described as arbitrary in this recent article in the New Zealand Medical Journal, because if you want to do it safely, it would have to be 25. And yet, interestingly, isn't it, that we say 18 for alcohol, but the same people who are happy for alcohol to be 18 are saying this supposedly less harmful drug you shouldn't use until you're 20. It seems to me they know full well that this is harmful. Now, Steve makes an interesting point about the backyard growers, mm-hmm. and that is that the police have said in their report on this referendum that they believe that that part of the law will be impossible to police. How will they know whether you are a green fairy and giving away your product or whether you're a seller? And the reality is, as Steve is pointing out, that the black market is more nuanced. These nickel and dimers, let me tell you just a quick story. My son is 23, and he showed me the other day on his phone that he was getting a direct message from a former high school friend every few days offering to sell him cannabis. And my son jokes to me, he says, Dad, this guy now has a marketing degree, and he sends me direct messages trying to market cannabis to me every single week. You see, it's no longer a case that you have to know where the tinny shop is, where you're looking for the sneakers hanging over the power lines. Now the tinny shop is coming to you. They're not going anywhere.
Right. And a text here. I have a question. I'm a serving police officer. Dairies and alcohol shops are often subjected to ram raid burglaries where cigarettes are targeted. They're sold among the black market. I know a lot of smokers who all prefer to pay the higher cost of cigarettes at the shop rather than use the cheaper black market. I don't know one person who's purchased stolen cigarettes. Why don't you think this will be the same for weed? Surely people would prefer to take the legal approach and pay a little more.
Well, we see that's simply not the case in places like Canada, where only 29% of users have chosen that. The majority said no. I already know how to get it from the black market. I've already got my friend in place who supplies to me. It didn't cause me any trouble under prohibition. I never got arrested once then. Why would I stop using my friend? Now, the other problem that we have in this market is the fact that the THC level of the legal product that's being advocated for under this model is capped at 15%. And yet in the marketplace, it's already 25%. And when I spoke to him to Cargill, a man who was a Yes supporter, bragged about his plant that he was growing that was 28%. So users are already accustomed to a much stronger product. And you have to ask yourself, over time, are people really going to be willing to pay twice the price for half-strength cannabis?
All right. Jamie, hi. Speaking of the strength of cannabis.
Good morning. The question I've got for you is, when you're speaking about the strength of the cannabis, what are these numbers based on? Because I know I've smoked cannabis now for about 15 years. I've also done quite a bit of oil extraction from it, and I know the results of how much oil you get from, say, an ounce of cannabis does not equate to anywhere near 25% of the overall volume, and neither is that oil that is extracted pure THC either. So can I ask you where you've got your numbers from?
Absolutely. So these numbers come from the US Department of Justice. They come from the University of Mississippi, who've been testing both leaf products and edible products over the last 40 years, and they have been chronicling how the THC level has been climbing. The arrow points straight up. Now, interestingly, those of us interested in medicinal, the CBD part of the plant does not go up over time. It remains stable. It's a very low-level ingredient. But the THC, the psychoactive ingredient that makes you high, is getting stronger and stronger throughout the years, and that's why we're seeing the prevalence of dabbing, of waxes, of edibles that are high potency products.